And one album, there's about 14 albums there. The old woman goes, "That dentist, right then." They had the best, each one of them had the best dentist in town. Well, I said, "No, thank you. I don't want to go to your dentist. I want to go to," I couldn't talk. And then more than Merle could talk on the telephone. That's, I knew if I fixed his dent because I had been kind of there myself. I was visiting about 14 miles from Dallas. I said, "I'd rather go back to my cousin's dentist. I mean, it may be a repeat, set of repeats. Better go where it's handy."
You're talking about Dennis?
I'm telling her about why I told Myrtle this morning to make her feel better, because I nearly lost the front toe too out in Texas.
Yeah.
And so finally we got back out there, and she told me this. She said, "My Dennis died. I don't know if this new Dennis took his place." But we went down there, and he looked and he took it out. And, oh, I was so scared. And then he called it a seven. He said, "Look at this. Did you ever see anything like this in your life?" "I never saw anything like this in my life." It's been in there since about 1916, I guess.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He's a young man. He never seen anything like it. He called his receptionist.
Yeah.
Felt like a guinea pig. And well, I said, "Can you fix it?" He said, "I don't know whether I can or not." And I don't know what to do. I never saw anything like it in my life. I had to take an x-ray to see if I could fix it now. Well, I thought he was going to send me across town maybe, but he had his own x-ray. So he took it, and then he came and he said, "Will you please relax?" He said, "You're the tensest thing I ever saw in my life. Relax." Well, I said, "I'm scared to death."
Lord,
he says, I think I can fix it. So he got bad, he got busy and fixed it. And then I said, "How much do I owe you?" He said, "I don't know." I never did that before in my life. What it was worth it. Well, I said, "Don't say that. It's worth everything to me. It's worth everything to me. Don't say that. You give me a bill and I'll pay it." Well, he said, "I clap, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to say. And I may say 20 minutes, may say 20 years. I don't know." And well, I said, "I'm so grateful that it's in. I'm so glad you did something." I said, "You gave me a bill, and I'll pay you." But he still wouldn't say. So I opened my pocketbook, and what was in my billfold, the first thing there was a $10 bill. I said, "That'd be all right?" He said, "Yes. If it had been a $20 bill, I'd give him that." Uh-huh. But that was the first thing there. And he said, "It'd be all right." And my cousin's husband waiting for my side, he just thought that was outrageous. Well, I said, "That's right. That wasn't outrageous at all. If you said $50, I'd have paid it." He didn't say anything, but I said, "I think that's about right. A regular office call would be $5.
Mm-hmm. You know,
back in those days, an x-ray of one tube would be $5.
Yeah.
So I said, "He's satisfied." And I said, "Yeah, I'm not dissatisfied." But that's been there since. That's been 1960.
Right?
But I don't care how I eat chicken.
Yeah. Yes, I'd be too. I am too. Mm-hmm. Yes. Very careful.
I told Myrtle, I said, "Are you careful?" She said, "Don't have to tell me that. I will."
Now,
and here's those old pictures of Mrs. Sane. And
oh, she's got
no sense. Yeah, you never saw the lack of anything like that, I bet.
Mm-mm. A journalistic highball run by a heathen. Arkansas, some kind of cat.
Here he is. That's Ed Seal Real.
I hadn't seen that.
No, but I hadn't. No, I didn't know where it was until just the other day.
Yeah. Well, that is just as handsome as it can be.
But now that isn't Colonel Hamilton. That's Ed Aria who gave to his friend Colonel Hamilton that his photograph.
Yeah. Well, I'm telling you, look at that, Faye. Okay. I'm afraid I don't want to get to it. I mean, just hold that over there. You take charge of it, so I won't. Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't look like Colonel Hampton. Don't you know you had that picture?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's old Magpie's depot.
Yes, sir. Now, there's that walk. Where does that walk go? Mm-hmm. That pavement over there. Mm-hmm. Does that go to town or somewhere?
That pavement?
See over there? See that nice pavement? Don't have it there now.
That must have been lime rock. I don't think that's pavement. I guess that's been lime rock sidewalk.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Now, isn't there the story about that fish? Here it is up there. There it is.
The giant tarpon wreck shot.
What does it say?
It's a whole big long story.
Yeah. Oh, the whole thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see. This is the write up of it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, let me see it for you. You can see over there.
No. All right.
Giant tarpon wrecks yacht. Huh? Mm-hmm. Many and varied have been the fish stories brought to Hot Springs by sportsmen from the four corners of the earth, some rich and rare and majestic. These include the story brought back by a Florida man way back in 1913, B.P., who related that a fisherman came back from a trip off the East Coast late one afternoon and reported that a gigantic octopus, the devilfish of that region that was known to prowl up and down the coast at night, catching in its clutch the livestock of the farmers when they came down to the ocean's brink at even time for a drink. He stated that one of these monsters had grasped his boat with six or seven arms, while with the other he picked up a small brown jug which was laying on some ice, and had drunk the entire contents, putting the entire jug back in his boat, which he offered in evidence to prove the truth of the story. Another was a huge sea serpent that, wishing to avoid the long trip around the peninsula of Florida to get from the Atlantic to the Gulf, came up on the east coast in the midst of a party of fishermen and started crawling across the state of Florida toward the Gulf on the west. It is said that while the serpent moved rapidly, his length was so great that it was more than 2 hours after his head disappeared into the Everglades before his tail came out of the ocean. But here comes a reliable and reputable citizen, mm-hmm. Colonel George W.G. Hamilton, mm-hmm. of the good state of Kentucky, where he resides in a palatial home near Mount Sterling. Mount Sterling? Mm-hmm. Here comes this good man of sound and disposing mind. In these later days, many, 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 many years after the country has been austerized, and relates thus. Beginning early this summer, Colonel Hamilton and his daughter, Mrs. L. W. Haskell of Memphis, have been touring both the east and west coast of Florida in Colonel Hamilton's staunch and palatial seagoing yacht.
But now that wasn't true. Ed stressed that story. It wasn't his yacht at all. It was the nicest boat on the pass, but it belonged to Captain Abel, and he just had it renovated.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Which was skippered by Captain Abel.
Mm-hmm. It was Captain Abel's boat.
Fort Myers.
Mm-hmm.
As fine a seafaring man as ever spliced a...
Yeah, he used to be on the... He used to be a captain of a boat on the Fly of the Mississippi.
Boy, you don't know that.
Hmm? As a young man, he was captain of a ship up going up and down the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
But Captain Abel was a kind of old man by this time, and he had this nice fishing boat. It had a cabin, and it was a nicer boat on the pass that he would rent so much a day
to
fishermen during the tarpon season.
Oh, I see. That was his business. I mean,
that was his business.
Sort of retired.
Mm-hmm.
The delightful days, fanned by the gentle breezes from the Spice Islands, the calm and glorious nights with the Southern Cross blazing over the equator, bathing in the limpid waters of both ocean and gulf, and the dreamy languor which were all conducive to the entire party voting Florida and everything Floridian in summer far superior and more enjoyable than winter.
The other people in the party was the Scotts from Dalton Springs, Mr. and Miss Scott from Dalton Springs, Kentucky, and myself. From Hamilton, the Zelda, and the Scotts, and Simon.
I hadn't heard of the Scotts, had I?
Mm-hmm. No. I never know the Scotts so well, but they were great friends of the Hamiltons.
Yeah.
And they live in Dalton Springs. That used to be quite a spa. And the Hamiltons were crazy about spas. Mm-hmm. They were always going running up to Hot Springs, over to Hot Springs, and then to Dalton Springs, and White Sulphur Springs.
Well, did he didn't have to work?
Well, they had big tobacco farm, and he had tenants.
Yeah. So he could run off whenever he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was a tobacco man?
Mm-hmm. They had warehouses in Cincinnati and round about.
Oh, he also dealt in it, bought it, and
mm-hmm.
sold it.
Mm-hmm.
Why... Yes, Faye, your neighbors over there back where you came from, were they lived in state on that, and the other tobacco man did down in town. That's right. That's right. Now, how would they have so much money from tobacco? It was just cash money, wasn't it?
Well, they had big farms, and they... They would grow this tobacco, and then he and his brother used to buy, and the brother used to stay in Cincinnati quite a lot, where they had warehouses.
Mm-hmm.
Pull that light down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a fish story,
mm-hmm.
and not a scenario of a siesta in the summer season. It was a delightfully still day at Boca Grande Pass. Is that pronounced right?
Mm-hmm.
Boca Grande.
Mm-hmm.
Off Gasparilla Island. They were fishing for that king of all game, the Topman, or Silver King, but whose correct name is Grande Corrie.
Yeah.
No fish that swims, not even the vigorous whale of the northern waters, puts up the battle that this waterfowler does. When he strikes, there's no question about it. And when he starts toward the South Pole, he starts as if he were past due right then. His rushes are interspersed with leaps and vicious shakings of the head in an effort to disentangle the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's right about that.
Huh?
I said, Ettore is right about that.
You've had a hold of him.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they really give you trouble.
Mm-hmm.
In these leaps, he springs entirely from the water sometimes to a distance so great, as great as his length,
mm-hmm.
often more than 10. Yes, 15 feet. Great sport had been enjoyed. The party, having hooked a good many, landed some, lost several. It was the 17th capture when the climax came. A royal fella took the lure, being trolled by Miss Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
A guest on
Macintosh.
On the yacht from Macintosh, Florida. And at the strike, being an accomplished fisherwoman, she struck hard and properly and got a strong hold.
Mm-hmm.
The battle was on. Here, there, everywhere, in a second almost, rushed a bundle of steel sinews. The line sang through the reel and fairly smoked as it was paid out. Back he would come towards the boat with Miss Dixon rapidly winding and keeping the line taut. A moment of slack line when you're after a tarpon is fatal. under the yacht, the great fish would rush and away toward the east as if he intended to reach his oars before nightfall. And then the blue water would break yonder, 300 feet away, and up out of the depths would come his majesty, 10,000 colors the rainbow never saw, glinting from his silvery sides. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you never told me that.
Hmm?
You never told me that. up until it seemed he almost had wings, and then down he would plunge. And away with another rush. Away yonder in front, he again breaks water with another prodigious leap. 40 minutes now, and the strain on the muscles and nerves of the fair fisher maiden is beginning to tell. But the sporting instinct is there, and she never falters for a second. The third leap. The great fish was well away on the starboard bow and appeared some 80 feet on the other side of the boat. The line begins to slacken when Miss Dixon, while implored by the other members of the party, began rapidly winding, again getting it taut enough so she can feel the great duty. And then the smash came, breaking water within 10 foot of the starboard beam of the boat. Up came the savage Grand Decoy and Sally, and cleanly leaped aboard the boat, slithering and sliding, still fighting like a wildcat. He slipped on down into the cockpit and cabin of the beautiful yacht, and before he could be dispatched with an oar from the lifeboat, wielded vigorously by Captain Abel, the great fish had not only completely demolished and wrecked the handsome fittings, but he had wrecked the nerves of all on board as well.
Lois?
Yeah, that was an experience. It's written on Fueling Stream too, and that's the cop I thought I had. I forgot that I had ever had this, but what I've been looking for was one in Fueling Stream.
Yeah. That'd be more circumstantial.
Mm-hmm. Because Edda Rea and the Hamlets were friends, and they went from here out to Hot Springs, he and Robin, his daughter. And so Ed just wrote that up, something to Rea. But there is a lot of truth in it, but it was a lot of his style, in literary styling, too.
Well, what is it?
I don't know. It's just the hobby of his to put out that frivolous little thing.
The Arkansas
Tomcat.
T-H-O-M-A-S cat. Thomas cat.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a picture of him. A journalistic highball run by a heathen. A smart publication for smart persons.
Mm-hmm.
Published for the people now on earth. Established in 1890, or whatever it says, by Jefferson Davis.
J. Davis O'Rea.
Mm-hmm. J. Davis O'Rea. And he's got truth like a sledgehammer hitting somebody up there that's called egotism.
And he had a brother named Ed Rea, who was a judge in Frankfort, Kentucky. And Judge Rea used to come down to Umatilla and Eustis to quail hunt and bring his dogs. And one time he was driving down and got as far as High Springs up here and had trouble with his car. And spent the night and phoned Colonel Hamilton. And we went up the next day and got him. He had stayed up there 2 or 3 days while they fixed his car. They had to order a part. And he came on down and stayed with us all that time. But then he went on to Umatilla, and we went down there while he was there and spent a day. And we have lunch with him at the hotel. But he, I got a big cabin telling him that on that trip down when he had his dog with him, he spent the night in, he couldn't make it one day in those days from Kentucky down. He spent the night in Atlanta. And those days too, you went right through the middle of Atlanta, not bypass, you had to go right through the middle of Atlanta. Spend the night at a hotel, not a motel. There were no such thing. So he pulled up on the hotels in Atlanta, spend the night, and went in and registered, and he asked if they would have an accommodation for his dog. And he said the clerk just bristled up one thing. Well, you certainly can't take him in your room with you. We don't allow dogs in the rooms. I guess it had people ask permission to take the dogs in the room. So he bristled up like that and just said, he said to him, well, I'm delighted to know that I won't have to spend the night with my dog. I'm not going to have to sleep with my dog. But I thought perhaps you'd have a kennel. You could take care of the dog. But now my sister and I spent the night in a Holiday Inn in Cleveland 2 years ago. Big one of the three-story motel things. And we had the park in the back. The parking lot was in the back. And it was full of cars. Nearly every car had a dog in it. And then there were portable kennels all over the parking place. You never saw as many dogs. And we went in to find our room. We were well on the third floor. And the place was just full of dogs. And we forgot something. We had to come back all the way back down there to the car. And we met one of the, you know, in a motel like that, they ought to have bellhops or something. Motel that large. But you just help yourself, you know. And so we had to come all the way down to get something we left out of the car. Left in the car. And down there we found some, ran into an attendant of some kind. And we said to him, we said, what in the world is going on here? We never saw us in the dog. The whole place is gone to the dogs. He said, have a big dog show here tomorrow and Sunday. We've spent Friday night there.
Oh.
Big dog show here in Cleveland, Saturday and Sunday. Oh, said, they're all staying here. His sister said. Well, I said, I guess we'll have a jolly good night's rest. He said, you won't know they're here. They've all been given tranquilizers. They have tranquilizer pills for dogs.
Why do you know?
So they said, you won't know there's a dog in the motel. And you didn't.
And they had portable cages.
They had portable kennels all out in there, and some of them had left the dogs in the car, but some of them had them in the room. Some of them had them in the room. And next morning, we got out kind of early, and those people were out walking the dogs and airing them, and some of them were the prettiest. Oh, they were beautiful. Of course, they were all show dogs, you know, coming to the show. They were fine specimens.
Well, you had it lucky if you like dogs.
Well, we did. We did enjoy seeing them out there. We didn't have much time for them, but we enjoyed them. We saw one we thought was pretty dog. Most spectacular thing. And she said, I never saw a dog like that. So we went over and asked her, and people love to talk about the dog.
Yeah.
So we went over and said, what kind of dog is that? That's the handsomest thing we ever saw in the river dog. It was an English Shepherd.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
You know an English Shepherd?
Yeah.
Aren't they pretty?
Mm-hmm. Three-story motel, and
yes,
they were having
all gone to the dogs.
Yes.
We were there on a Friday night. Lucille had gotten off from her work at Eastman about 5 o'clock, and we left right at 5:30. And she had a reservation at this place. You can drive over there in about 4 hours. We left on the New York Thruway, onto the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and then onto the Ohio, whatever they call that. Through or something. So we just out off of one expressway into another from Rochester down to Buffalo, across Pennsylvania a little while, then into Cincinnati, right in the around the edge of the state.
Well, now what is the connection with J. Davis Orea? That's what we started talking mm-hmm. about. You going to tell me about him?
Now, I don't know much about Ed Orea. I mean about J. Davis. J. Davis is a brother of Ed.
Yes, and you knew Ed.
I knew the Ed.
Better.
Of course, Colonel Hamilton knew both of them.
Both of them. Well,
now. He lived in Hot Springs. This fellow lived in Hot Springs. And the judge lived in Frankfort. And the judge was just come down here to hunt.
Yes. Yeah. And why would he do this?
Why he published this thing? I don't know. Why he published it?
Well, that's cute as pie, though.
Huh? What?
That's cute as pie, I said.
Yeah. Nice. I don't know what the other was.
Yes, it's done. It's, you know, it's done in such a good, so good, such good, good, so mm-hmm. good nature.
It says, at the following European hotels can be found a complete file of the Arkansas Thomas Cat in their reading rooms.
Yeah.
In London, the Cecil. In Cairo, the Shepherd. In Florence, the Grand. In Monte Carlo, the Grand. That's something?
Yeah.
The subscription rate is $2 a year. By J. Davis O'Reilly. Published every Saturday. Published every Saturday.
You know, right here, really wise, are you?
Huh?
You suppose it really wise?
I don't know.
No idea. Well, that's cute pie. Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought that's pretty good write-up, guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived at Dawson Springs.
What?
He lived at Dawson Springs.
No, he lived in Hot Springs. It was the Scotts who lived in Dawson Springs.
Yes.
And Hamlet used to go down to Dawson Springs and met the Scotts who lived there. And they became friends. Yeah, I thought you'd enjoy this.
Well, now, who was the judge? Is that the judge we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. The judge was the
photograph?
Was the one who went to Atlanta and didn't want to sleep with his dog, you see.
Tell me some more about him. He's interesting.
That's all I knew about him. That's all I... He was stayed at our house several days and went on down there. And then Miss Hamilton and I went down and Mother. We went down and had lunch with him one day at this hotel where he was staying in. He was staying at Fountain Inn in Eustis. The Wartman Fountain Pen people had a hotel down there in those days, and they called it the Fountain Inn.
Oh.
Because they made Wartman's made fountain pens.
Well, what
is it? Oh, look here, we got cake and ice cream again.
Uh-huh. Cake and ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know? Oh, I've had many a Waterman fountain pen. I wish I had a good one now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't hardly buy a fountain pen anymore.
No, you can't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know who called my attention to that. Mrs. Rutland is over at my house the other day. And we were on a committee together. And we wanted all of our signatures. So she said, I haven't signed. So you sign, then I'll sign it. So I signed my pen there on my desk, and then I gave it to her. She said, "What, a fountain pen?" She said, "Well, the whole long story." She said, "I don't know where in the world you find another fountain pen." Mm-hmm.
That's a good photograph.
Now see, I've gotten all rested here. I talk myself into being rested.
Isn't that wonderful? Mm-hmm. And it's cool and nice.
You know, my mother said to me, long for the last part of her lifetime, she said, "My dear, don't you ever get tired." She said, "I never heard you say you were tired."
That marvelous. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have found during the years that when I advertise my ailments and my tiredness, I found very little marketable. So
nobody really pays you anything.
I take them off the market. But I was down there all morning, and it was kind of tiresome. Only thing that's tiresome about it was I wanted to be doing something else.
Yeah.
And then drove home in this terrible rain. I thought all my windows on the east side of my house were up. That didn't sit very well with me. But I got home and found they weren't. But I didn't know that. There were 20 miles coming home. And then I went and had my part on the Missionary Society program.
What'd you do?
Well, I was supposed to make up a dialogue between two men down in Mexico who had given a station wagon to their church.
You just made it up?
I made it up. Mm-hmm. Well, I made up a dialogue.
What do you know about Mexicans?
Hmm?
What do you know about Mexicans?
Well, see, we had the book. We had the textbook thing.
Oh.
he doesn't know about missionary society. He doesn't know about missionary society. And their quarterlies and their books. So they wanted to be original, though. They just gave you little facts and things about it, and then you film to make up a dialogue. So there were about four or five of those. Cade Whittington led the meeting. And Cade Whittington sang this morning at Mr. Teese's hearing. You know Mr. Teese?
Hey. At Micanopy?
Uh-huh. He was 93 or 4.
I didn't know that.
But Cade led the mission meeting this afternoon. And she had given out the part. Marjorie Edwards had a part. That's L.K.'s wife. She was there.
Mm-hmm.
Myrtle Phillips was there.
You'd seen her before.
With a piece.
Yes, you had seen her before.
So before we get into something else, you know, when I came back the other night, my eyes just ached.
Oh, they did?
Yes, from looking at your light.
Mm-hmm.
People have lights down like this where you look into them. You need them upstairs there.
Well, I didn't know about your eyes. I'm sorry. I did not say that.
You couldn't have known.
Huh?
But you see how
yes, you could have. But, you know, I was just intrigued by your neighbor. Jim Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't get him off my mind. I kept thinking about it. And I couldn't figure out why he wanted to go away over to Williston to do that. You know, it just bothered me. Now, how long have you known Jim Campbell?
I know he was born over there. I know ever since he was born.
Ever since he's all his life.
Mm-hmm. But he goes there, he makes a little extra money over there.
Oh.
Let's talk about some more. I want to sort of get him in the mind. He lived with his grandmother
mm-hmm.
there for a long time.
Your grandmother was Mrs. Flew Ellen.
Flew Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother married this no count fella.
Mm-hmm. Raymond Camp.
Raymond Camp.
And he's now dead. And but before that time, I'm not sure this is true, but I know he was in Rayford at one time, and I believe the report is that he died in Rayford. But before that time, why Mary had of course been divorced from him, and in time she married Robert Jones.
Yeah.
He was a druggist, and then Rob died. So she's been a widow for quite a while now, and she's recently retired from being a bookkeeper for Why Is the Drug Store for 21 years or more.
And she's retired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only person I knew at Why Is the Drug Store by name was Leslie Sweet's father. He died.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them I just know when I see them. But now all those people in there have been there forever, haven't they? I mean, they don't turn
mm-hmm.
over like
mm-hmm.
they may now, but they didn't used to turn over much.
Even the women who make the vegetable soup, they used to serve and still do this marvelous vegetable soup at Wise's.
Is that so?
Uh-huh.
And rice.
And vegetable soup and rice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm surprised you all haven't seen Jim Camp in Gainesville on the street. He used to be downtown a good deal. Of course, he's out at WRUF now,
mm-hmm.
At the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that boy has climbed those four or five flights of stairs there every day. I don't think there's an elevator.
Yeah, there's an elevator.
There's an elevator.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't work.
But he used to be downtown at the Sun.
Mm-hmm.
He used to be at the courthouse a lot reporting.
Yeah.
Things in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
But now what he does for the Sun, he writes a column out of this called Flickr. It used to call it Flickr and Static.
Yeah.
I don't know whether he writes that kind of column, but he writes something about radios. I mean, about radio programs and about movie picture shows.
Well, it's funny, I hadn't noticed that.
Did you drink a cup of coffee?
It's funny, I didn't notice that column.
But other people, and then he has he reviews books and things, I think, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon on WRUF. I never heard him, because I don't listen to radio at that time.
Well, I listen.
You were just watching it, yeah.
But other people said they've heard him. I don't know, but it's 4:30 or something, because I just don't know, because I don't hear the radio at that time.
Yeah.
We're devoted to this this chocolate ice cream.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's that Dutch Holland.
Yeah.
Now here's...
It's good.
Wait a minute now, Lewis. Let me get it. I don't have any of that straight. His parents wanted to make a druggist out of him. His parents wanted to make a druggist.
A druggist out of him. His stepfather did.
Oh, yeah.
And he's the one who flunked out, you know. And then they sent him back the next year and bought his books and everything again and flunked out a second time.
Yeah.
You just can't make a person do what he doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
Parents can't plan the children's lives.
Uh-huh.
And Bob was a druggist. He liked it and thought it was good money, thought it was a good profession. So he planned for Jim to be a druggist. But Jim wouldn't be. Just didn't like it.
That's when he's just starting out.
Mm-hmm. So, but he liked picture shows and things like that. So from that time, he had to finish out the year doing something and went back to Bunnell and got a job at the picture show over there. That's where Rob had a drugstore at that time. Later he sold the one at Bunnell and moved down to New Smyrna, had drugstore down there. That's where he died. But in the meantime, Jim had been running the projector there at Bunnell, and then he got back over here and stayed with his grandmother and got some jobs here, and his grandmother kept him. She kept him in the right path to keep it out here. Over there, he'd lose his job. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he's done better since he's been with his grandmother than when he was with. They all got along, wasn't that? But it seemed like they just couldn't manage and direct him like their grandmother could.
What was she like, Lewis?
And the grandmother?
Yeah.
Oh, she was a nice old lady. But she always had trouble with her legs, feet and legs. And she went to Dr. Quixley for Dr. O'Callaghan. Oh, she went regular. She went regular. They just couldn't get along out without him. Well, I went Dr. Quixley occasionally about my feet. And I said, well, and he'd always talk about Jim and Llewellyn to me. Because that was, but the one thing, at least the one thing we had in common. And so I said, well, I said, you've done a lot, Miss Llewellyn. She said she just couldn't ambulate at all. If you didn't take such good care of her, he said, well, I don't want to do for her. What's the matter with the feet? And I don't want to do for her. I'm glad if I help her.
Let me tell you something. I mean, Florence Carl said, I was talking to him down there one time, and he said all the doctors had a type of patient that they'd come in and they had decided that they wanted an operation.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't give it to them, somebody else
mm-hmm.
would.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you just went ahead and mm-hmm. operated on them for mm-hmm. whatever they wanted you to operate on.
After that, if they didn't, somebody else would. So.
Somebody else would, and that money was good as.
Now this girl, Aura Saul, was a doctor, and But he didn't say a long time ago. He said, well, they won't pill. if they don't give them the pill, they think you're not a good doctor. And so there's a lot of kind of harvest pills. We just give them these pills and let them go their merry way and they get better.
Yeah.
They say, but if we didn't give them to them, somebody else would.
Yeah. Lord, who is, somehow or other, I have in my mind that Ms. Jim Camp's house over there wasn't lighted very well. Did you tell me that?
Jim wasn't there. I don't imagine. You're going to get in around 11 o'clock.
Well, I mean his grandmother's house there.
Oh, his grandmother. Mm-hmm.
You didn't tell me that.
Wasn't lighted very well?
Yes.
Well, I tell you, the grandmother for years and years lived in her bedroom and her kitchen. Now, that was before she could walk, just back there.
Yeah.
The kitchen was on the back and her bedroom was the back bedroom.
Yeah.
And you never saw a light in front of the house.
Yeah.
And Jim's room is upstairs. And now and there's a bath upstairs. Well, Miss Little had a bedroom down here and a bath next to it. Now that she's gone, the neighbors don't know why in the world Jim doesn't move himself down to this bedroom with a bath right next to it.
Yeah.
He's upstairs, and the bathroom is right next to his bedroom up there. It's on the same floor, but it doesn't join it.
Yeah.
And looks like he'd be so much more comfortable downstairs. And what we're worried about are those narrow, the steps are very narrow going up there. And we said if anything happened to Jim, if Jim would die up there, I'll handle it. Well, they'd get his body down.
He had to be alive to get out of his cell.
As big as he is.
Uh-huh.
And the steps kind of narrow. But he said, no, it's so much, I don't know, he thinks it's cooler upstairs. Well, I said, this is the time you get in so late. But anyway, we said if you like it, why, we believe if you'd ever move down there. All of us, Mrs. Phillips is a neighbor too, and she knows him real well. And Ms. Bruce saw the other side. He had a lot of neighbors around there. But all the neighbors are crazy about Jim. We don't want him to sell the place. We don't know who he'd sell to. I don't think he'd sell to anybody that we would like in a better, certainly, than we like Jim or as well. So we just talked to Jim and help him all the ways we can. But no, he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to move downstairs. And had a Neil seats upstairs in her house alone. And she could fix herself up downstairs too. But she said, ooh, she'd be scared downstairs.
Jim not scared.
No, Jim not scared. He's just used to it up there, that's
uh-huh.
all. He's just used
uh-huh.
to it, and he thinks he'd like it better. Well, I said, I feel safer downstairs. If I'm upstairs and I hear somebody downstairs, I'm trapped.
Yeah.
If I'm downstairs and hear somebody, I can't jump out the window. Or the house gets on fire and I'm downstairs, I can get out better.
Yeah.
So I feel safer downstairs.
You never raised the question of feeling safe.
I never have been scared.
Yeah.
I'm glad to say. Thankful to say.
Yeah. You never
I can imagine it being a bad feeling, but I never have felt frightened.
You never wake up at night and feel like you hear somebody just sort of tiptoeing across.
I don't know what I do. I don't know.
Well,
I think I just die right there and then. That'd be the end of it. That'd be much simpler.
That's one of the things I've done all my life, Lord. When I, as far back as I remember, I'd wake up in the middle of the night and I'd hear somebody walking in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my breath would get tighter and tighter. That one time I tried to get up, I was scared, I couldn't move.
Last night he was in there, and I came in, and he was in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. I came in, and he said, listen, there's somebody upstairs.
Oh, that was not it.
Yeah, I know, but you know, it was a little clown. And you can just imagine, I mean, it was had been dripping the rain, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he was teasing me, of course.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, I did one time during my father's lifetime. I was just quite young then, just back in the days. But I thought one night I heard somebody in the attic. I don't want to have anybody ever get in the attic because they had to take a ladder or something to get up there. But it sounded just like a step. and I just lost my breath. I just said,
"Oh yeah."
I went to my father and told him, and he got up and he said, "I bet you Nikolai can tell you what that is. There's a rat upstairs, and it's just jumping from one what do you call it, beam of no, what do you call that thing, raptor, from one raptor to another."
Yeah.
And then one time I was going upstairs and I thought I saw a snake right there on the bend of the stairs. And I came running down and I told my father, and he got everything to take the world to kill a snake with, you know, and go upstairs. And guess what it was? My mother used to have a switch, a hair switch. Have a braid or something, you know, for us. And so, and going up down the steps, she had dropped that switch, that hair. And she looked just like a snake. And he was about to knock the house down and kill that snake.
Now that's a piece of furniture I don't know what it is.
A switch.
Yes. I never heard tell of that before.
A hair braid?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Just cloth?
No, now my mother had lovely hair. She had a pretty wavy hair, and you used to wear it with a ball around here. And then they take this braid, and sometimes made out of your own hair.
You just shave your own braid.
Braid. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And a switch, they call it.
Oh, you know, I hadn't thought about that for years and years.
And mother would braid hers, braid this switch, and then she'd put that braid around that that ball of hair that she had up there. Or you can make a bigger ball of hair by putting this in with your own hair, you know. Anyway, everybody had a switch.
Oh, yeah.
Now they have falls.
And wiglets and things. Mm-hmm.
Well, now, have you read Jim Kemp's column?
No, because I never see the games of paper. All right. But
I'll get it.
But Flora Richardson read something about it. She said, "I want to show you this guy Jim in the paper." But the editor was kind of criticizing Jim, and the Flora showed it to me. Well, I said, "I don't consider that criticism. I think that's flattery." Jim had written, he was criticizing some of these plays, and then the editor was commenting and criticizing him for what he said. Well, I said, I'm still for Jim.
Flora had it.
Flora had it. It's in the paper every day or two. I don't know if it's every day, but somewhere in the games of song.
Well, you couldn't put it in every day. That's too much.
That's
too much every day.
Well, they have pictures every day, you know. I don't know how often he writes, sends in these things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I don't know whether I told you this or not, but when I had these two cousins visit me from Texas this winter, did I tell you that?
No.
Well, one of them, the one I visited, went on for a battle loser too. But she thought that the nice thing for her to do while she was here, she wanted to do something, she'd take us to a show. But she hadn't been to a show a long time. I hadn't either. But I knew the show, there weren't many shows fit to go to. But she didn't know that much even. So she kept on taking Hattie and me and Mary, my other cousin who was there. She won't do that. Well, I tried to talk her out of it, and she said, "What show?" Well, I said, "I don't know whether this show is good or not." But I said, "Well, I know two people I can ask who know. We'll ask Jim Kemp, and I'll ask Florence Van Arm." You know. Well, Jim told me, he said, "Not a thing in town fit to see this week." And that was about the week he wrote that thing that Flora showed it to me. He said, "Not a thing fit to see this week, anywhere." Well, I'll ask Florence too. As she said the same thing, except she said the only thing I'd say that's fit to see was that Alaskan Safari. Well, so I told Fran all about that. Well, I said, I don't know whether you want to do that or not. I said, so we just go up and have Dennis say it though. the Suncoast room down that Mosses, if you want to kind of put on the dog and entertain, but we'll go there and just call that for the evenings after the show. Well, she couldn't go over the show idea. Well, then she read No Kind of Paper. They're showing the same thing down there that they were showing up here. And they said it was the Academy Award picture, the most hilarious comedy of the year, I don't know what all. And Natalie Wood was in it, and they thought that was a recommendation. And so that's what the Cal tape said. So I said, well, we'll just go up and see. So we passed by that Severi place. I said, now this is the Alaska Severi that Florence says is the only thing fit to see. Well, that didn't sound good to them. So we went on. She kind of wanted to go to that thing. It was in the palace. Is that what you call it? Plaza.
Plaza.
That's it. It was four names. Two couples' names. You remember Bert and Alice, or Carol and Ted or something? Four names.
I haven't seen a picture show. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what that was showing there. So they said, well, they say, we'll try it. So Fran bought the four tickets. And we went in. And I want to tell you, that music background when you went in and sat out, guess what it was? The Hallelujah Chorus. And then person, I know that my Redeemer liveth. Well, I couldn't get over it. Those strains, definitely those strains. Mm-hmm. The prelude. Well, then the picture started. And it was pretty rough. And I thought, well, I don't have to look at it. Dark in here. I don't have to look at it. So I didn't look at it. But I didn't like it. And I didn't know what the others were doing. But after a while, Fran said something about, how was it? I said, I don't know how it is. I don't know how it is. I'm not looking at it. I don't much like it. She said, I don't like it at all. She said, let's go back and ask her for our money back. Well, I never would have done that in the world. I'd got up and left. But we got up and left, and she went to the office, and she says, I want my money back. And we'll have to send for the manager. Well, I felt like I wish I was 1,000 miles. I would love to be 1,000 miles from there. They sent for the manager. She says, you want the money back. So that's that kind of picture. And the young man who sold the ticket, he looked at me and he said, well, I sold the tickets. I thought she looked like she's old enough to take it. But they gave her all money back.
Good for her.
That's a pretty sizable sum of money, too.
Hmm? Yes, for four tickets. For
yes.
Tickets. There's about $2, I think.
$2 a piece?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Fran learned her lesson, I think. No, and they said, I said it was bad enough now, but I guess it gets worse. And we've heard people later say, who saw it, said it did get worse. I don't bother where we come to. Oh, it's just terrible. Those things. Oh,
what is Jim doing? How did Jim take his vacation? Jim
spent 2 weeks in New York City. His mother went with him. And he told me before he left, he said, we've gotten tickets for the 10 top shows. Easton got them for us. They flew Easton. I thought maybe he had gone to WRUF, some of them complimentary. But he said, I don't guess he minds you telling this. He said, we've gotten tickets for the 10 top shows. Says, I sent him a check there for $250.
Mm-hmm.
$250.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, since he's been back home, he told me, he said, I got to see so-and-so. I don't know the name of the picture. I got to see that picture. It was a lucky thing. Said, I wanted to see it, but didn't have a ticket. And I just hadn't called down there, and they had a cancellation. So that's 11 shows he saw. And then also in conversation, he said, and one afternoon I was in this movie house, seeing this movie. That was one movie he saw. That was 11, at least 11 plays in one movie that I know of that he saw in 14 days' time. But that's his business. It's not altogether just entertainment for him. Because he writes about them. He writes about those people and writes about the characters.
I think, Lois, I can't imagine you not having the Gainesville Sun where you can follow what he writes. He's right there, your neighbor. I'm going to look at it now, just as soon as I
get
you
see if you find anything that Jim wrote.
I'd love to talk to him.
Huh?
But he never home in a...
No, he never home in a... In a reasonable time. In a reasonable time.
You'd have to talk to him at the office, and I don't want to talk to him at the office.
You know, I found this in the... Some kind of magazine. And I cut it out. I'm going to send it to John.
Oh, yes, that's what you're talking about. Have you ever wished you could draw this well?
Well, I sent him one already, and now I found that one. They're very similar, but I'm going to send that one too. So it's impressive that I'm in business.
Yeah.
I think you ought to do something about that talent.
Well, let me tell you, Lois, now I don't know anything about drawing or anything. This, life and rest, that's, but on the things I know about, they...
I'm sending that again about this famous school for art.
Oh, yeah.
They, things I know about, they have advertised like that, and I have written in and got some of the work, see what they did, and they do good things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you would take it and not do any good, and they wouldn't, they're not going to push you, but it's available, and of course, John would be interested in it.
But I had a similar, and maybe an exactly this, maybe from the same, I think from the same place. I have already sent him that.
Yeah.
And then I found this. I'm sending this too next time I write to it. Because I intend to send him this picture of his mother.
Of his mother?
Yeah, that's his mother.
Oh.
She was on the basketball team too.
Oh, yes, that's his mother.
That one's Aura. That's Aura.
That's Aura, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Now let me get a
You mean you're going to give him your class picture?
I'm going to send this to him, but I want it back.
Why don't you do that, Lois? don't you trust that to the mail or anything?
Oh.
You just have one.
Yes, I just have one. But
well, you can't get it duplicated. No, that's too nice. I wouldn't let that get out of here.
Look at these caps.
Yeah. And we wore ribbons on the head a lot of that time. Bring around here, tie them up in front. I had a ribbon on my hair.
Every one of them is pretty. Every girl is pretty.
Yes.
They're all
and
pretty.
Healthy and
healthy.
Pretty.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now that's Columbia College for you.
In 1915.
Black eyes of yours.
Columbia College.
It's a basketball team. See, Catherine Merle, Lois Dixon, Inez Cotton, we were the Falwins.
Yeah.
And she was the captain.
Mm-hmm.
Then Myrtle Edwards, Nadine Page, and Leo Densler, she was absent. They were guards. Then Aura Willingham, Ed Albritton, and Lillian Cox. It's the Aura Willingham and Nadine Page were jumping centers. She was tall like I am. And Edna Albritton and Lillian Cox were side centers. And then they wrote down there, she wrote down there all the games we played that year. And the scores, I think. Yeah, here's there. Now, Columbia had 15, and whoever played against, they had 14. Columbia College 17, and this other one 7, but I think we won all the games. Looks like it. Putnam County. I don't know. We might not have beaten Palatka. I don't know what. I'm not so sure about that score.
Columbia College was around here somewhere close.
Lake City.
It's
Lake City.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
That was old Baptist College. The buildings are now the Veterans Hospital.
Oh.
Oh.
and the buildings.
I didn't get to see these cards. Yeah.
You did what?
The cards.
Now those buildings in Lake City.
Lois, do you know?
Were built for the University. The University of Florida was new from those buildings down to Gainesville.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever get things like this copied?
Mm-hmm.
I'll inquire, see if I can find out.
Just,
it's no trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You answer.
Now that's the old roads going north from town.
Yes.
This is.
Hello?
Yes. Got it.
Hello?
Were you all there? Well, it looked like it's deserted.
Because that's the Baptist church.
Oh, yes.
Magus now. And then, of course, there's nothing has a fence right now. And that used to be a big old house there, which they recently torn down.
Oh,
that
I
whole
see.
Lot is for sale.
Oh, yeah. That's the Baptist.
Mm-hmm. And right across here is our four lane, right in front of it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I see now. I see where it, I had to get it straightened there.
That's right, it wasn't.
Now,
it was
this
late,
is the
overlaid.
One that,
that's
this is
that's
the one that
that's
had
this thing.
Dreams about.
Mm-hmm.
He just couldn't get it out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that?
Yeah.
That, you know, that ought to be preserved some way.
I still got to meet Christian Deadman a while ago. She's Ms. Rath. That's her mother.
Oh.
And they have one too. Oh, so I wouldn't take anything for mine. I don't have many that are in town, but they have one. I have one.
Yeah.
We know there at least two in town.
Well, let me tell you, your guard dog welcomed me.
It is just unbelievable.
Oh, he is.
Yeah,
he's a guard dog. He's really glad to see you.
I just, you know, wish that it could be made permanent somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Of course, you can get it. But now that hasn't lost its color or anything.
Yeah, uh-huh. No, it hasn't. No, these others are faded, but that hasn't. That tree's held its color very well, too.
Yeah.
And you pass right by that tree going down my house way down in the corner.
Yeah.
The park used to have a fence around it.
That's nice, too.
Now here's the road. Up on top of this hill is a meat house.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, on top of the hill is a meat house.
Yeah.
And this pond is that pond right there, and that's where I was baptized.
Really?
Yeah.
And this is
now
the meat house.
That's a pretty grassy place there now.
This is the meat house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wait, right over here on this side of the house.
See, what is it?
I'm doing
bad
day. The wrong one. And this is where you were baptized.
Now that, I think that's my mother's handwriting right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And that's my father's handwriting.
Well, let me tell you. Right,
he was down in Lakeland. His brother lived down there. And mother was up in Georgia.
Isn't that lovely handwriting?
I'll get home Wednesday and we'll write you then.
Yeah, so you can
love him to Henry.
Feet up, not a soul around, hardly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.